From the wet heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, monsters on Coast to Coast. Boy, did it pour out here in the St. Louis area. Still raining. Studio staying strong, though. Here's what's happening. The South Korean president now has said the U.S. and South Korea policies are aligned on North Korea and promised there will be no war on the Korean Peninsula over again, ever again. Meanwhile, the deluded North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is executing growing numbers of North Koreans who no longer worship him as a living god. His ruthlessness and his regime is persecuting thousands who dare to practice other religions within its borders, according to a new U.S. study. Dr. Jerome Corsi here from, of course, Infowars.com. Jerry, of course, a statement by the South Korean president guaranteeing no war. What do you think of that?
Well, I think, George, it shows that President Trump has succeeded, at least for the moment, in backing North Korea, Kim Jong-un, off from his Guam attack. Is threatens to launch missiles at Guam, mm-hmm. the island that is U.S. controlled in the South Pacific. So for the time being, I think China and the United States are working together to apply economic pressure. I'm still doubtful it will work long term. I don't think Kim Jong-un is stable or capable of resisting military threats or new missile launches. But for the moment, I think it's a win for President Trump.
I think so, too. And, of course, we just don't know what's in the mind of that person. This story that I had about him executing people who no longer see him as a living god, is that fake news or could that be real?
That could be real. He is insane enough to do things like that. And I think that's the problem, George, is you're calculating, the mind of somebody who's probably not very stable and not likely to stay on the path of reason. I've cautioned, and we've cautioned, that a war in North Korea could be extremely dangerous and is really not the best solution. At the moment, it looks like sanity is prevailing, but I don't count on it long term, George.
Thank you. Dr. Jerry Corsi, Infowars.com. A New Jersey couple has been arrested after exploiting a glitch in the website for Lowe's Home Improvement stores to steal and then resell online more than $250,000 worth of items. Wow, how do they get into that? President Donald Trump has lashed out again against the online retailer Amazon, accusing it of harming tax-paying retailers and stripping jobs from towns and cities across the country. Lauren Weinstein, of course, an expert on the Internet. Lauren, what do you think of that statement? Is it true?
You know, sometimes I understand what's going on, and sometimes I don't.
This is one of those cases.
Yeah, this is one of those cases where I'm having trouble unpacking this one. Sometimes I think you're better off being on Donald Trump's enemies list than on his friends list, because at least when you're on the enemies list, you know where you stand from day to day. Because you'll remember there were scenes some months ago of Jeff Bezos and him smiling together and shaking hands and everything.
Something happened.
Yeah, I can't really understand what Donald Trump is going after here. The thing is that Amazon already collects sales tax nationally on everything that they sell directly, and they've been doing that for some time now. And when it comes to third-party sales, that's other people that sell through Amazon, that's controlled by the individual states, and Amazon has been urging those third-party resellers to collect sales tax. I don't understand what Trump is going after here. I mean, clearly he's not saying that people shouldn't be able to buy things online. So if it's really a tax question, I just have the feeling he's misinformed on this. I mean, either that or he's upset about something the Washington Post wrote, because, of course, Bezos bought the Washington Post, so he'll mm-hmm. Donald Trump will now sometimes say it's an Amazon Washington Post story.
How many jobs do you think Amazon has created, not only within its own company, but also all the suppliers who are providing goods and services through Amazon?
Right. I don't know what the number is, but you just made a very important point. It's not just the number of people that work in Amazon warehouses and work in the Amazon computer information technology systems, which are vast. all of that. It's the entire ecosystem that Amazon supports in terms of suppliers and shippers and all of that. So it's really a vast and growing enterprise, especially because Amazon is starting to establish local physical facilities around the country too. So, obviously they represent a competitive force against traditional brick-and-mortar retailers, but I don't think most people would be willing to give up online retailing, online buying, just for the sake of keeping things the way they were. So in terms of, I really think that this tax question, it was a big issue before Amazon was collecting that sales tax
sure.
nationally, but now they collect it. So I really don't understand really what's going on here.
Lauren, every time you're on at our news segments, people emailing me saying, what's his website? How do I get a hold of him? So would you give it out for us?
Easiest way is just to go to vortex.com, V-O-R-T-E-X.com, and then there's links to all my other stuff.
You got it. Thanks, Lauren Weinstein. Expert on the Internet, he truly is. A pilot program that pays some Los Angeles County homeowners to build a second dwelling on their property to house homeless people has been approved by the Board of Supervisors. Homeowners in unincorporated communities who qualify can receive up to $75,000 to build a second dwelling in areas zoned for such structures, while others may get $50,000 to update and legalize an existing dwelling. How about that to help the homeless? Daniel Craig is back as James Bond again. He's going to do it one more time, so look for one of those brand new James Bond shows to pop up with Daniel Craig, and he says, this is it. Up next, John Hogue joins us. We're going to be talking with him about Nostradamus, the solar eclipse, which comes up next Monday. Some people think it's the end of the world. I don't, but let's find out what John thinks next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. The solar eclipse is next Monday. John Hogue, of course, writes on the subjects of the occult, parapsychology, mysticism, prophecy. He is a world authority on Nostradamus, a best-selling author as well. I was just with him in Everett, Washington at our sold-out live stage show. And John, welcome back, and that was a great time. I had fun with that.
Oh, George, that was so much fun. Got to hear you sing. We sang together a little bit.
And they just adore you, my friend. When we did the meet and greet afterwards, these people waited in line to see you for 2.5 hours.
How many people were in that line? It was
about 800.
Wow. I mean, that's.
And they did not leave.
1,000 that were there.
I felt happy for the first person in line, but the last person, my God, they had to wait 2.5 hours to get up the steps and do all that. But. Well, I want to thank you, too, for your generosity and your time. Yeah, you
So many lovely people came and had such nice things to say about the show, and hopefully we'll do it again soon.
Yeah,
because
that's
one of your biggest markets up here in the Northwest.
You got that right. Okay, next Monday is the solar eclipse. There are some people who claim that something horrible is going to happen. I don't think it's going to be earth-shattering or earth-ending, but what do you think?
Well, it's not earth-ending, but it could be the end of the American century, the beginning of the end.
Oh, really?
Eclipses, over the 30 years that I've studied prophecy and astrology and looking at celestial influences to things, there's an unusual correlation between eclipses and how they do two things. They can disrupt earth and sea. They stimulate seismic activity and tsunami activity. And they also create what I call unconsciousness quakes. But in either case, it's not dramatically, instantly happening. You know, nature and the cosmos is not a stopwatch. Things are seeded. They can happen later. But they're planted on the time of the eclipse. I've been looking at a number of things dealing. I just finished a book and released it on Amazon called The Great American Eclipse, Earthquake and Tsunami, which is available there. And in it, I finally gave everybody my final report of many years concerning an odd pattern that happens with great eclipses. One of which was predicted by Nostradamus to happen at the end of the millennium to pass its shadow over Flanders Field.
which is Belgium, northern France, which indeed did happen on the 11th of August, 1999. And an interesting thing happened. It passed, the shadow passed over Eastern Europe into Greece, into Turkey, near the Marmara Sea, over central Turkey, passing through the midriff of Iran, over the Rand of Kutch and Gujarat, India, in the westernmost province, and then finally across the Indian plain into the Bay of Bengal. And then what began to happen, 6 days or so after the eclipse, is the Izmit earthquake in Turkey, right over where the shadow happened. It's an important thing to note is that the shadow is either 90% to 100% is where seismic activity hits. It hit there, and then a little later hit Athens region, which is also under the influence of 90 to 100%. These were major quakes. I mean, the Turkish quake killed 50,000 people. Then several months, about 3 months later, it hit closer, deeper into Anatolia and hit other cities there. And then about 18 months later, the Rand of Kutch, which saw complete totality, was hit by a massive earthquake that destroyed 400,000 structures.
Jeez.
And it's interesting, and I had a first-hand experience of it because it happened 5 days before I was flying to go to an ashram in India that I usually go to meditate in. And the day I was flying over it, we flew over the Rand of Kutch just after dusk. And people have heard about the black hole of Calcutta. Well, there was a black hole from horizon to horizon in the power grids of western, extreme western India. It was blackened. There was no light. And from the news feeds that we were seeing on the plane coming in, I've never seen anything quite like it. The only thing standing straight and erect were trees. And they looked like they'd been growing in a rock quarry that expanded to the horizon. That was what was left of a lot of the towns of Kutch. Now, the same area that was hit by the eclipse totality, when it left Earth, the shadow of the moon left Earth, it left near the Andaman Islands in the Bay of Bengal. That also experienced, a few years afterwards, a tsunami event. And it's an ironic pun from English, but one of the worst affected areas was in Iran, a city called Bam.
Oh, that was wiped out with an earthquake.
97,000 people, of which 50,000 were casualties.
God.
It was a 90% raising of the city, a very popular tourist resort in the ancient Silk Road region, was hit by that 4 years and 4 months after the eclipse. So when I started seeing that, I wondered if there's going to be a repeated pattern, if great eclipses somehow trigger something, seed something in future epicenters to erupt. So I waited for the next great eclipse 10 years later, and that was the great eclipse of 2009. Which perhaps will remain in our lifetime the greatest eclipse in history because the most millions of people saw it. It started the shadow near where the Rand of Kutch of the last eclipse took place. It hit Gujarat, again, a little south of the places that were devastated. Mm-hmm. It passed across the most populated region of the Ganges Plain. The shadow then of the moon then went up through Sikkim, into the kingdom of Bhutan, which has not seen earthquakes in that highly active Himalayan region for 300 years. It went into eastern Tibet, out through the highly seismic areas of the Chinese Himalayan regions, Sichuan and Yunnan and those areas, passed over the equally populated Han Plain over Shanghai and Hangzhou, and then stretched out over the Ryukyu Islands of Japan, making Honshu 60 to 70% under the totality of the shadow, and then went all the way out into the South Pacific near Samoa and Tonga and left the Earth, the shadow did.
So does Nostradamus talk a lot about eclipses and catastrophes?
It's a very important, that was the other thing that locked me into this situation. But just before I answer that, I just have to quickly say that what then happened is that Samoa had tsunamis within a month after this happened. Sikkim had earthquakes. It was Bhutan, which hadn't had earthquakes for three centuries, had a major quake. The area that's highly seismically active over China and the Himalayan eastern regions, which usually every year has a flurry of 4 to 5 magnitude quakes. In the next few years, all the quakes that were 6 or higher up into the 8 and 7.5 all happened exactly within the shadow in that highly seismic zone. And Tohoku, the great quake and tsunami of Japan, was also affected by that shadow. Now, to your question about Nostradamus and eclipses, there is a passage in his, not only did he describe the Flanders eclipse, but there seems to be a pattern in his prophecies, in his prose prophecy, a letter he wrote to King Henry II of France at the time, that indicate he thought a great eclipse would be a precursor of an advent of reversals of nations, mighting kingdoms, a kind of a stop of forward motion of destiny. In short, great upheavals in anticipation of a new era. You know, whenever great epochs end, the old is destroyed and the new rises out of it. And we're definitely, 2012 was just one of many reboots in prophetic traditions of great time cycles that are happening all through our lifetimes at this time. There's a crowd of them. And so the old is passing away for the new era to come. And there will be upheavals of old traditions. And literally upheavals of earth and tsunamis, because it's all interconnected.
What about people, John? Will they act weird during the eclipse over a period of time?
Well, in my book,
they're acting weird now. So,
yeah. Well, there's two reasons for that, George. And both of them, one real is the superstitions that a lot of people have towards eclipses, especially I learned this from living in India, that a number of people will not come out and watch an eclipse. They will stay in their homes. The pregnant women will stay away from the rays of the shadow. They believe that some cosmic forces are released that people should not be under. Now, with every superstition, there's some kernel of truth. So certainly that was my lead into looking at, well, is there some kind of force that we, as of yet, do not understand that might have something to do with all of this? And so that's what set me on my search to understand what eclipses actually do. Now, to the other point about the what I call the unconsciousness quake that can be seeded by eclipses. In my book, I talk about how it's not just seismic issues, but also upheavals. Nostradamus also talked about upheavals not just simply being of Earth, but also being political, military, social, religious. So, and since things are interconnected, I mean, I can tell you that even though I was in India when it happened, the big quake we had up here, the Nisqually quake near Seattle, I'm up in the Northwest, There were riots in Pioneer Square in Seattle, big riots, the night before the quake hit. People influence quakes influence people. The cosmos is interconnected. And if people are unmindful or unconscious of how they influence things, that is what many native peoples of the Aboriginal cultures of prophecy in the fourth world have been telling me over the years, that there is a kind of a mind plague, a mind boil that happens when too many billions of people live on the earth unconsciously, unaware of their thoughts and their feelings. They create a in the atmosphere of the psychic atmosphere around the planet, the etheric, they create a disharmony, which makes it very imperative that people become more centered and meditative.
It's happening now. John, we're going to take a quick break, but we will be back more with John Hoag as we talk about the upcoming solar eclipse. He will be with us next hour as well with your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, John Hoag with us as we talk about the upcoming solar eclipse. John, so the shadow that the moon casts on the planet, is that the danger zone for the earthquakes?
It's the danger zone for the areas that are seismically sensitive. And in this situation, we have an eclipse that hasn't happened in 99 years that's going to pass over four of the five most sensitive zones in the lower 48 states of the United States. It's not going to affect Hawaii or Alaska unless there's tsunamis that come from the first of these, which is passed over by the eclipse off the coast of Oregon, which is right smack dab in the middle of the Cascadia subduction zone. And it's interesting to note that many years back, I think about 38, almost 40 years ago, back in 1979, there was an eclipse that crossed over the subduction zone in February of 1979, and its totality shadow passed over one of the volcanoes that are, of course, created by the subduction zone friction between the North American plate and the San Juan de Fuca plate. That was Mount St. Helens. Mount St. Helens had been dormant for over a century. The shadow passed over as it went off into Canada and the Arctic, and 15 months later, Mount St. Helens blew its top. It could be coincidence, but there's a number of things that say it isn't, that there may be more than meets the eye. Now, of course, there was an eclipse that also saw a similar passage over America from sea to shining sea in 8th of June 1918. But in that one, only one region, the subduction zone, was of earthquakes was covered. This time, it's potentially four, and even the northern end of the San Andreas Fault System, which would make it five areas that are influenced. Jeez. So we have a five times more of a chance of some seismic activity with this passage than back in 1918. Now, the areas that are also affected after the subduction zone, which is an area that's where you get the most massive earthquakes, it's very similar to the subduction zone that's off the coast of Sumatra that unzipped several hundred miles and created the Great Indian Ocean tsunami and earthquake from 2004, the Boxer Day earthquake, which killed upwards of 300,000 people, probably more. Even though the official is 250,000 for loss of life, all across the Indian Ocean. Now, the next area that's affected, that's within 90% to 100% totality, although not exact, fortunately, is the Yellowstone supervolcano caldera. Now, I don't,
which is huge if it erupts.
Well, I don't see it on the record erupting, but if, you know, with the largest lava pool known underneath our tectonic plates in the world at this time, if there was some shift, it could cause 7 to 9 magnitude quake. Of course, more likely the lower magnitude than the higher in the Rocky Mountain areas would be affected. The next area, which I consider the most unprepared area for quakes and one of the most densely populated, is the Mississippi Basin, central area around New Madrid Fault Line.
New Madrid Fault, which is a big fault line.
Carbondale, Illinois, which is just across the river from the New Madrid region, is going to be where the totality of this eclipse reaches its maximum state of shadow. The New Madrid Fault Line is within 98 to 96% totality. But in 1811 and early 1812, when there was hardly anybody living there, there were massive earthquakes, four of them, one aftershock and three major tremors, that were between 7.5 to above 8 magnitude, that because it's a intraplate quake, it's an old crust of the earth, it tends to spread the resonance across a wider area. When that quake happened, the church bells in Boston started ringing on their own.
And the Mississippi flowed the other way.
The Mississippi changed its course, had waterfalls for a time, and created the Great Lakes just opposite in Tennessee from tributaries that were blocked by the movement of earth. St. Louis, which was a small town of a few thousand people at that time, much of it was leveled. The handful of cabins that now consist of the 1.6 million people of metropolitan Memphis were leveled. And so if there was in this basic region of brick and mortar architecture where no one is really prepared for any kind of quakes, if there was a similar number of quakes to come, again, within weeks, several months, because this is the pattern, 8 to 18 months, or in lesser frequency, but some of the larger ones that happen seeded perhaps by the eclipse shadow, could shake the earth and create waves as much as 5 years after the event, which my book goes into detail to explain the timing, and how the last two great eclipses had very similar patterns of time for visitations of quakes. So we're not done yet, though. We have one more of the four of the five seismic zones that's going to be impacted. And it's the only place on the East Coast that's seismically dangerous frequently, and that is South Carolina.
How soon, John, when the shadow passes through these regions, is there a possible earthquake? I mean, in the past, how quickly did it happen?
Well, in 1999, George, it came within 6 days. The İzmit quake, which killed 50,000 people in Turkey, happened within 6 days after the eclipse of the 11th of August, 1999. And then the Greek quake northwest of Athens, which damaged 50,000 houses and killed a few hundred people, happened just a few weeks after that. And then there was the a quake farther into the heartland of Anatolia, Turkey, which killed 800 in another city, about 62 miles farther east from the epicenter of İzmit. So there's a potential of clusters. However, the 2009 quake did not see anything happen until a month or so after the shadow passed. And the first area to receive damage was off Samoa, where the shadow lifted off Earth of the moon. And that had 40 to 100-foot tidal waves hit the island of Samoa and American Samoa and also Tonga, where it was closer to the epicenter of that subduction quake. Subduction megathrusts are always the most dangerous. That's why, actually, the Seattle, Northwest, British Columbia, Oregon area is the most, where I live, basically, is the most potentially dangerous area for this. South Carolina in 1886 in Charleston, which is just within the totality shadow of this new eclipse, they had an earthquake in the upper 7 magnitude, and it devastated Charleston, South Carolina, and the devastation, it spread 60-mile radius inland. So it's a much more populated area now. And so this brings a strange comparison to something mythological with America. We kind of get back to the theme of superstitions with a kernel of truth. Well, mythology tells us, and there's some evidence from the memories of peoples all around the Northern Atlantic Rim of Atlantis. In fact, the Atlantic Ocean is named after the island continent that many stories, not just embellishments of the New Age, but also ancient scriptures talk about a land that the people all around the coast of Northern Atlantic have similar names for. The Basque, who are considered the most genetically connected to the survivors of the Atlanteans, their name for it was Atlantica. Across the sea in Mesoamerica, they call it Atitlan. In Ireland, they call it Avalon. These linguistically are similar to all around. Even the Eskimos and others have similar names for it. So this myth has some legs, in fact, fragmented as they are. And the story of Atlantis is that it was a similar superpower in the antediluvian times. It was technologically advanced, rich and powerful, and a bit of a bully with its neighbors, preaching one idea but acting in hypocrisy to that idea. And of course, the myth in its hyperbole, as myths often are exaggerated, in one night, Atlantis sank into the ocean. Some people believe they technologically were tampering with the Earth's natural ecology and they actually destroyed themselves. That's one idea. But what I found very interesting in my readings of this is what the spirit guides of Ruth Montgomery, who was a famous seer in the 60s and 70s, famous for her axis shift prophecy books. She had this idea from her spirit guides that Americans at our time are actually, could be, many of us are reincarnates of the time of Atlantis. That somehow there's a karmic connection to America actually facing, Americans are facing a similar lesson where our overweening hubris and military might are talking about democracy but not practicing it with our neighbors is destining us to have a humbling of the hegemon through natural disasters. Now, I'm not saying that we're going to see America sink into the ocean. I don't think that's going to happen. I talk about in this book, A Great American Eclipse, how Nostradamus, even the best prophets, tend to suffer from what I call prophetic hyperbole, where their emotional impact of seeing these visions make them expand upon them emotionally much higher intensity of quakes and damage than actually happens. So when I look at, in the real world, what a prophecy might mean, I always water it way down from what I hear, and usually that ends up being more accurate. So taming the hyperbole still, if we are about to be exposed for four of the five major seismic sensitive areas of the lower 48 United States.
All at one time, too. Jeez.
Well, over a period of months, weeks, 18 months to 5 years. It could even be as late as 5 years. And what is intriguing about that is that unlike most major eclipses like this going from sea to sea and over America, we're actually going to have a rare event of another total eclipse just 7 years later from now, in April of 2024. The eclipse is going to come over Mexico in totality in Toledo. It'll pass over Texas. Dallas will be the biggest city that'll have totality. No earthquake zones there. But ironically, this time it's a direct hit on the New Madrid fault line, 100% totality.
Here we go.
Before it goes out of Maine and Halifax into the Atlantic Ocean. So I'm sorry to say, all of you folks living in the Mississippi Basin, you're going to get hit twice by the potential of heightened seismic activity. So I advise you to pressure your leaders to think big and long term and start refitting your cities and your roads and your bridges to make them more earthquake proof.
John, let's talk a little bit about North Korea in the moments we have before we go to the top of the hour. And the South Korean president says no wars there in the peninsula at all. Kim Jong-un has backed down a little bit on his threat to Guam. What's your take, prophecy-wise?
I was writing a book called President Trump Predictions that I had to put aside until just now because of what Trump did in April when he started launching missiles into Syria, mm-hmm. 180 degrees from his foreign policy, and then over chocolate cake with President Xi of China, announced that he was sending the first of now three carrier strike groups that are off on station around the Korean Peninsula. Here's the strange thing about this. We are in the eclipse, and also triggers, like I said, the unconsciousness quake. So,
yep.
Since the end of July, we have been in one of Nostradamus's war windows that indicate when Mars and Saturn are both in fire signs in astrology, which is happening now, which is reaching its peak of harmonics right during the eclipse. Which means the positive energy towards war is very, very, very high right now, extremely high during the eclipse. Now, with astrology, it's not clockwork. It's like nature. The cosmos doesn't have a stopwatch. This stuff happens, and it's usually in the weeks or months after these aspects that things happen. So I look with great concern towards September and especially October for some miscalculation between North Korea and America in this situation. However, I also feel as close as war is, the very closeness of it has brought us into the what Trump is actually most consistent in doing because of his sun sign, his birth sign, having Uranus right over it, the planet of surprises, the planet of unexpected turnarounds. I see in these two men, Kim Jong-un and Donald J. Trump, two people who absolutely get each other as bluffers. And they're playing a game of bluff and double bluff. When Trump went to the fire and fury, Kim Jong-un, unbeknownst to what most of the press keeps saying, that he's unpredictable and unsteady and crazy. Well, if he is, he's crazy like a fox. I mean, people have a lot of, the mainstream media has a lot of myths that they've promoted since 1950, like the Korean, North Korean regime is unstable. Do you call this unstable if it's been in power since 1950? Actually, 1945, the Kims have been in power at some point with Korea longer than the evil Castro, quote-unquote,
in right.
Cuba. They're not unstable. Certainly, the West has been trying to destabilize them. This new sanctions, actually, that the Congress used to stymie the executive branch's power to do sanctions or relieve them, and these sanctions that have actually start to hit the Korean people where they eat.
Hold on, John. We're at the top. We'll come back and finish up about North Korea, and then we'll take some phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM.